Hi, this is Katrina and Sass, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, it's Katrina.
And this is Sass.
And this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. And we're going to start today's podcast off with a great little excerpt from, what would you say he is?
Like a professor of mythology.
Yes, he absolutely is. Mr. Joseph Campbell. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Guys, the round of the stars. Very often the planetary deities are regarded as tricksters because they introduce disorder. They move in different ways. And anything that is a disordering principle is associated then with the trickster and the diabolical as opposed to demonic. A very interesting thing is our interpretation of the word demon, the demonic. The demonic refers, it's a Greek word, and it refers to the dynamic of life. Your demon is the dynamic of your life. And we are so against the dynamic of life in our tradition that we turned it into a devil. The word demon has negative meaning in our tradition. This is fantastic. Also, the serpent, which represents the dynamic of life. The serpent can shed its skin to be born again, and so represents the power of life to throw off death, and represents the bondage of life to time. It's the dynamic of life and consciousness in the field of temporal pairs of opposites, birth, death, and all that, and life goes on through it. It's been turned into the negative principle in our tradition, as though our tradition were against life. And since our tradition is against life, well, the deity himself is against life. And you have a deity who's talking about supernatural grace and virtue and all, with life as something to be, as it were, despised instead of celebrated, and the body as something awful rather than awesome.
Poof. Woof, 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 woof.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
So interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so true. You know what's really, really interesting to me is he's talking about demons. Now, there was this fantastic I guess it was books for teens. It started with a book called The Golden Compass, which I think was made into a film. And the main characters, the human characters in these books, all have something that were called demons. That are with them, I think, from birth. And they're like some type of animal. Each person has a different type of animal that's a demon that's attached to them energetically. And if the demon gets hurt or cut off from the human expires or dies. This is how I remember it. I could be a little bit wrong. But isn't that interesting that he says demon is like the dynamic of life? So, and these people die in the story if their demons get cut away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So it it's so intriguing, this idea that our culture, which I assume is what he's talking about, yeah, our culture is so against life. What the hell is that?
Well, and look at what he's talking about. I mean, he's talking about tricksters. He's talking about demons. He's talking about serpents, all very much a part of a lot of the theology out there. But it's, if we just hear those words, we think what we've been told those words are. But through interpretations, through understandings of work like Joseph Campbell, we can also come to understand the role of mythology as a plus and not something to push away because it has nothing to do with us. It doesn't make sense.
It has everything.
Right.
Everything to do with us.
It was a really hard thing for me. I definitely didn't set out to with any intention of trying to learn how to interpret, but I think through the practice, as your eyes start to awaken a little more and your heart starts to open a little more, you see things that you've seen every single day in very different ways. And it doesn't just unfold one way. It unfolds multitudes of ways. And I started really becoming interested in varying interpretations of life, of things, just like Joseph Campbell was talking about. The Greek word of demonic is the dynamic of life. Mm-hmm. And now if you say demon, we'd all run for the hills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not all of us, maybe, but what else are we misinterpreting? Or what else, not even miss, because that's saying that one thing is wrong and something else is right. I think it's all right because it's also all wrong. But if we don't interpret it outside of one way, that's what I think we get stuck in this hole in our own life. Like why we look at ourselves and remember maybe what your high school reputation was. And so then you carry that around with you your whole life and you have a hard time interpreting yourself to yourself in a new way. So you think it's about getting new friends and you think it's about moving to another location, getting another job, going back to school, because we're looking to improve our image, but our image is only what we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from an interpretation, which comes from our roles and models, like we've spoken so many times on these podcasts from. So interpretations have everything to do with us. If we can listen to somebody like Joseph Campbell and just go, wow, I didn't really understand that that's what the word demonic meant. Well, maybe that's also the way we don't understand how somebody could call us something stupid or unattractive or a bitch or whatever. And instead of holding on to that belief, like we do the word demonic, why not create an imagination to maybe interpret things in many different ways? Because when you go get the job or the new husband or the new girlfriend, and I should definitely be talking to myself because I'm talking about maybe getting another cat because my cat is not fulfilling this contractual, invisible coding of a legal binding verbal contract that I thought I had when I wanted a cat. I wanted love, damn it.
Well, I thought you were, I'm glad it's the cat and not the Tommy. That freaked me out.
Well, that shouldn't freak you out. I mean, nothing should freak you out at this point with me.
I just think, and I should talk, because I'm thinking of trading in the old model for a new one.
Well, I got news for you. It's not going to do shit. Because wherever you go, there you are.
Oh, my Lord.
And I'm not saying sit in your shit and don't try to change the external either. I'm just saying, like, if we can also include the interpretation that wherever we're at could have some very big significance to us in life. So many times I've seen so many people change careers or change husbands or wives.
Mm-hmm.
And
cats.
And cats, right? And they end up, you know, after the honeymoon period in the same exact spot with the same exact issues, saying, wow, I thought this person was different, but it turns out it's them too. And no, never do we go, it's not.
It turns out that it's got nothing to do with them. And
exactly.
It has everything to do with me. Because
yeah.
I'm the one that interprets things the same way. So it doesn't matter what they're giving off, right?
That's, I mean, yeah.
It's like we chase our own tails a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
And again, right down to programming, down to the initial beginning programming that we've absorbed. And I think that what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that if we can manage to find a way to keep our lack of a better word, I'm going to say our minds open to the possibility and the actual probability of different outcomes or different meanings to things. Mm-hmm. You know, here's an example from my life that I just thought of, because I've spent most of my life feeling that I need to help people through things. Let's say they're having, you know, some horrible experience in a relationship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like right in there trying to fix all this shit. I'm going to fix your shit, okay, because that's what I do. Because, you know, I'm so fucking wise, right? So you get in there, and what happens is, and I'm sure everybody listening, including you, has experienced this. You get in there, you fix all the shit up, and then both the people hate you.
Oh, yeah. They're
like, it's your fucking fault. It was you, you asshole. So it's like, oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Or you end up alienating one of the two people involved. And so now that they used to be your friends, now you just have one friend left because you screwed up the other one. It is insane to me how when you keep your nose out of it, and this is a delicate line that you walk because you still want to be a friend, but you do not want to interfere in ways that are going to make people feel like their choices have been taken away from them, you know?
Well, what's
you're
your
making the choice? Yeah.
What's your interpretation of a friend? We could start with that.
My interpretation of a friend is the best friends to me are the ones that can lovingly reflect myself back to me. They're not necessarily doing it because they know they're doing it, but it's just like you go, oh, God. My favorite saying is, are you me? Because, wow, what you're it's incredible. And it's amazing how you'll see yourself in so many different types of personalities. It's like, I'm schizophrenic. I think I got about 50,000 personalities in here, not to mention 6 accents. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it is in the end, what is any relationship, be it with an inanimate object, a human being, an animal, a location? What is it? What's a relationship?
It's a mirror.
There you go. So when you say, what is a friend to you? How would you interpret a friend? To me, it's somebody who reflects you lovingly. That's what I would consider a friend. When somebody reflects you unlovingly, they're doing the same job, but they're not a goddamn friend. Although in the overall grand scheme of things, they probably are, you know, because, hey, back to the old we're one thing, which is a waste of breath. But that's, you know, like when you're in a crabby mood and everywhere you go, peoples are just bitches to you. Peoples are bitches. You know what I mean? Like, tell me they're not reflecting you. Of course they're reflecting you. Or even when you have anger deep inside you that you're not even actually acknowledging consciously. Those are the best. That's when you get like the huge fights in intimate relationships. Yeah. Anyways, now that Dr. Psychology 101 Jordan has gone on for about 4 hours, I'm going to be quiet.
Don't be. Absolutely don't
wait,
be.
This is a podcast.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to babble.
If we were really wise, we would just get on the podcast and be silent.
Oh, that would be so cool.
One day.
And everybody would listen. I'd download that silence. Jesus. I could pay for some silence. There's no silence anymore. Everything is just massive, massive noise overload. I wake up in the morning with a noise hangover. I was at Disney last weekend.
Ooh.
You want to talk about some noise, my sister?
Oh.
It's like it's like a full-on assault to the senses in every way. And I wonder, what is so wonderful about that? Why would that make that the happiest place on earth? I really don't know.
That actually does say a lot, doesn't it?
It brings a whole new meaning to the word amusement park. Brutal. It's freaking brutal. And I had to go to the osteopath to get my bones sorted out after all the smashing around on those rides.
Did you
Mind
really?
You, some of them are pretty cool, yeah. Some of those rides are pretty cool. Anyways, you know, like Harry Potter. Like, really? Wow. Wicked. Anyways, back to the serpent and the devil.
I kind of interpret friendship these days as being space holders, you know? And what I mean by that is it's so important in friendship, in relationships, to learn how to hold space for somebody. So when I have, and I do, have friends that hold space for me long enough so that I could look at myself in the mirror, that's a really beneficial thing, especially in practice of any sort. And I don't need it to be loving all the time. I just need it to be honest.
That is loving to me. That's my interpretation of that. Yeah. And when you're saying, that's the exact opposite of what I was talking about earlier. And that's what I've learned over the course of all these years that I've been alive, is that when you rush in to fix or save, you have very often the opposite effect than the one you were hoping for.
Yeah.
But when you hold space,
yeah,
which is what you're saying,
mm,
that's a much, much more mature and, I think, evolved way of dealing with things. That's what it's all about in the end. So far, as far as to my level of awareness, is what I'm trying to say, because I'm sure there's way more I don't know yet.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, otherwise, what would be the point? It never ends. But holding space, can you define what that means for people who don't necessarily know what the hell we're talking about when we say holding space for another?
Yeah. I could say what it is for me.
Okay, that's good enough.
It's entering into a situation without an agenda. For sure. It's understanding whether from my Katrina 1, which, you know, for those of you who don't know, Katrina 1 is my kind of way of explaining the true self, you know, who we really are, whether that's nobody or somebody. It's not somebody, that's for sure. And our 2 is our personalities and our roles and our models in life. And when we walk into relationship conversation, I mean, relationship to me is also with strangers. You know, relationship is just where you place yourself in relation to another being. And another being may be an animal. So to walk in there with no agenda, offering the only thing that you actually can offer another being, which is the nature of your being, the essence of that true self. If that's the only thing you can offer anybody, everything else is just the fog on the mirror, because it's opinions disguised as advice. And I'm not saying by any means I've mastered this. I would imagine that that's not really something that was given to me as a gift. But I practice it. I practice knowing when I'm not holding space way more than I practice noticing other people not being able to hold space for me, because I don't really learn a lot about holding space from that angle. I did it at the start of what I learned about holding space, but now I just try to not blame others for not being able to hold space, and I just try to find out the ways in which I may not have been holding space. So imagine walking into a relationship or a conversation with somebody and not offering advice and not having any judgment and accepting them in their human predicament. I mean, wow, yeah, that sounds great. Really hard when you first start doing it. I find it a lot easier now because we find ways to wake up. Like, what wakes you up, right? Interpreting poetry and mythology really helped me in understanding how to hold space, because the things that block us from being able to open to interpretations is that when you are stuck and your heels are in the ground with an opinion, with who you think you are and who you think that person is, or your wife is, or your child is, or the guy pumping gas is, that takes up space. That takes up space inside of us, and that fogs the mirror of the heart, for lack of a better word. So I can't hold space because I don't have any inside of myself. If I'm walking in saying, I know exactly what you should do. But when people ask me for advice, it becomes the next level of how to hold space to give advice, whether you do or you decide you don't. I'm not saying that everybody shouldn't be giving advice. I'm just saying, is there space in you first? Or are you giving advice from what your role and model in life and societal schmutz that you have on you? Or are you doing this from a place of spaciousness? Does that make any sense whatsoever?
It totally does. Does to me. What you're saying to me, I'm going to interpret what you just said.
Please do. I need to walk around with you then. Like, I'll say blah, 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 and next is that. Like
when interpret. You get to that next level, where somebody asks you, actually solicits your advice, that is a whole other level. And you're saying, how am I coming at that? Where am I coming from with my advice? Am I coming from a place where I want to control the outcome, where I have a vested interest in the way this other person is going to behave? Or am I coming from a place where I'm sharing a different way of looking at something that might present an opening to the other, an opening, a new way of perceiving, a new way of perceiving the situation, a new way of interpreting the situation, or what have you. And it is amazing what you were just saying earlier, how at first, because it's almost like we've been taught all along through our popular culture, through books, through films, through high school, work, all these things, that we are expected to interfere and to control, et cetera. I think it's all due to fear and feeling vulnerable and not feeling powerful, having no sense of authority or dominion over the self. And also wanting to conform to expectations that you feel have been placed on you.
Well, and what about just the fact that I think people also do it because they want to help? They feel helpless. They want to help their friends or their family.
Exactly right. There's so many reasons for it. But when you can say or give your advice and not feel attached to it, when you can say to somebody, well, I would maybe try this or I think that or blah, 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 but I'm not right. That's just what I think, you know? I mean, I don't always believe what I think, which is a very good place to be.
That's a very wise place.
It's an extremely good place to be. But that's the key. That, to me, is definitely holding space because you're offering. You've been asked. Number one, you must be asked. Mm. Do not offer advice to someone who has not asked for it.
No,
worst thing
not.
You could ever do.
Right.
Then you've been asked. You share what you think. But you also leave the space open for the other to go, nah, that doesn't sound right to me. Or, cool, but I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or what have you. That is holding space for someone to me. Or just silence, like you said before. You know, this is powerful stuff. And you forget. It's amazing to me how far we've come in our lives that we can actually be in a place where we understand this. Do you know what I mean? I forgot I used to be like that. I've had an experience recently in my life with some dear friends of mine where I had to keep my big nose out of the mess. And it taught me so much. Mm. I'm forever grateful for this. And they've sorted it out. They're fine. You know, so it's like, wow, this is definitely the way for me going forward, at least at this point so far.
Yeah, you are a really compassionate person and you do hold space, because I personally, as your friend, never feel like you're trying to get a point across or that you're preachy in any way. You leave doors open. And if I ask you for advice, you give it freely. It's not like you're a robot holding yourself back from speaking your mind. I mean, that wouldn't be great either, but you do hold space. And I think it is, it's a cultivation, definitely. It feels like a cultivation to me. But I think once I realized that advice was like the spiritual practices that are out there, that there's no form or action that by itself is sacred. So in other words, there's nothing right or wrong. So advice is not right or wrong. Advice is an action you're taking. You're giving, or giving advice is an action. The thing that makes something sacred is that the being doing it or saying it is sacred. So if you think of it that way, when you find out that your best friends, or maybe not even your best friend, because that might be a really easy one, but your neighbor's husband is cheating on him, and you're in a moral dilemma. Do I tell her? The statistics say if you tell her, she's going to hate you. Or do you just not say a word? And you can't sleep at night or whatever. Maybe you could sleep just fine, but that bothers you. Do you go around telling everybody else but her? You know, what's the motive behind it? You know, what's the right thing to do? I try to remember that there is no right or wrong, because the things that created right or wrong in our world are the same things that are now, it's the mind. I was trying to finish that line, but I think that's
the mind and the programming.
Yeah, I have such an aversion, I don't know why, to the word programming.
Because it's annoying as heck.
The word programming?
Programming isn't, it's the thought that you are programmed like a flipping computer.
No, I mean the literal word of programming.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I know that,
but
it sounds, it makes me feel like there's no hope when you say the word programming. I don't know why.
Yes, but there is, because you can delete programs and you can reprogram and you can override them, et cetera. So you just, it's a word that's stuck in your head, isn't it?
It is. I know. That's why I'm telling you. It's my interpretation. Like, the word program sounds like somebody crazy on a street corner holding a sign that's like, "You're all programmed." You know, and like, that's what's just stuck in my mind. I lived in New York for too long. I love conditioning. I love conditioning. But okay, listen, hold space for that, right? Tell me to fuck off. Because the word programming doesn't mean that to you. And maybe I need to keep hearing the word programming so that I can just get over that place of programming sounding like, I already know I'm crazy. I already am that person on the street corner to many, many people. And I'm all right with it.
Yeah, I used to think that too, except for now I think they're crazy, not me.
We are all crazy.
Goddamn right. We incarnated into this mess. It's not a mess. It's not a mess. That was a joke, because it's not a mess. It's the most fantastic, extraordinary, unbelievable, incredible fucking school, curriculum, whatever you want, known. And I mean, and we get to actually physically experience our creations. What a joy. And also, what a nightmare. Can be either.
It is.
Comes
both.
Down to programming. F you.
Oh, that's funny.
Holy Lord.
Think about that, though, Sass. Think about if no action, no word, no scripture, no text alone is sacred. And it's the being that is saying it, the being that is being.
Yes. And interpreting.
Then mythology and interpretations of poetry. It's not about a right or wrong. It's just like art.
Oh.
But so are we. We are art. Your life is art. Your job.
That's right.
Your marriage, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whether you're going to go to this college or that college, it's all art. And you are the artist and you paint it. And I'm not saying go out there and just like not care about anything in the world because you're the artist and you're going to paint a blank canvas. What I'm saying is that we're trying to cultivate balance between being in the world and being of the world. And I feel that through that balance, it doesn't take us to have to go live in a cave to get away from programming. Or the demonic values of life. I feel like there is a lot to do, but none of it should be done by the doer. We need to redefine that human life is about the being and stop raising people up based on their knowledge. You know, just having this knowledge, like you could memorize all Rumi, all Kabir, all Hafiz, all of the mythology. But who and what is the nature of the being that is doing that, that is sharing that, that is interpreting that? That's what it's doing for you. So if you're out there saying, what do I care about mythology or poetry? None of it makes sense to me. I mean, I was there. And I could still be there tomorrow. But isn't it interesting that there's some things in this world that when we just don't get it, we push it away and we blame others, saying that's woo-woo? Or, I mean, I just did it to you, right? Before we got on the call. So that starts telling me all about why we both are having
astrology
memory issues this week and why we feel like we have no, we can't get anything done and
not
we can't
grounded.
Remember. Right. So what'd you say, Sass?
I said it was Neptune. I'm in the middle of a huge Neptune transit and mine's just starting. And then I also said that there's a full moon in Scorpio tomorrow night too, which has a tendency to make, you know, the collective, the mass mind tends to make us a little bit crankier than usual, and also like, you know, hyper freaking active and hyper, because full moons do that to you. Just ask any hospital or police department. You know, it's affecting, the moon affects the tides, which is liquid, which is fluid, and the fluid in the body is affected by the same tidal pulls that you know, the moon does to the oceans. So most of our bodies are fluid. So it makes sense, doesn't it? How it affects it that way. So genius.
Listen.
I have to read this to you. I can't.
Wait, I just have to tell you one more thing before you read that
piece of genius.
If anybody out there has the same reaction to what Sass just said as me, think about what we just said. The interpretation. If it doesn't resonate for you to wake up as a bitch tomorrow and blame that Mercury is surrounding the moon with a fluid gel like cotton or whatever.
Jesus,
you said something like that, right?
Fluid gel sounds like feminine napkins or something. A fluid gel like Mercury surrounding the moon. What the fuck is that?
See, I have a hostile takeover in my brain when I start to hear about that sort of stuff.
Yes, just, you do.
I'm practicing.
Oh my God, will you stop spewing that crap? That's what she's thinking. I'm just telling you.
I mean, my two might be thinking that. But,
but of course, my one. But is my sitting one. On the throne.
It's just in love with you, in blissful, joyful love. But
okay,
I will say.
All right.
That if you do feel like that, remember that you can interpret that if you just can research a little bit, what things could Mercury represent? What things could the moon or the sun represent? Feminine energy, male energy. It's
Mercury is the intellect.
It's not about, is it really?
It's communication and intellect.
See? So why couldn't there be... that's exactly what I'm saying. Why can't we open up enough to have this kind of dialogue, to be able to understand that all the things that we protest is just, we're not holding space for ourselves in those moments to be able to go... Wow, well, look what I'm rolling my eyes at, or, well, that's a chick thing, and I'm too cool for that, or I don't get that, or, you know, it's also not a free ticket to go, I'm a bitch, and it's because Mercury is in retrograde. It's not a free ticket to just go acting bitchy either, and do the research, Get enticed, get curious, just like you would about anything else in your life. Get curious and find your own interpretation for what Sass just said, whether it's interpreting it as a maxi pad or whatever.
I never said anything about it being a ticket to say that you're a bet. You know what I mean? Like, I never said anything about that. I said if you feel that, if there's a tendency, a feeling, a vibration in the air around you, in the atmosphere around you, where everybody seems to be on edge, and you don't tell me you've never experienced something like that.
Oh, no. I'm saying that there are people out there
who would blame it, of course, but I'm not talking about that.
That literally take a giant exhale after they find out Mercury's in retrograde because their computer fell into
crash.
The water because they had the computer at the edge of the pool. And they say, oh, it's Mercury in retrograde. Okay, makes sense. I mean, there's still a personal responsibility here. See the mythology and everything. Interpret everything because truth is truth. It's going to stand up. It's going to stand up. You don't have to worry about that. You're not going to all of a sudden, you know, grow wings and fly away because you interpreted something as being a woo-woo thing. You know, whether people who believe that sort of stuff or subscribe to that sort of belief system, believe it or not, is not really what I'm interested in. I'm more interested in the opposition to it.
It's just another interpretation of things. Astrology or numerology or anything of that nature is simply another way of interpreting the same data or however you say that fucking word. I can never figure it out. But that's exactly what it is. And when you say, oh, that's crap or that's woo, first of all, anyone who says that has most definitely spent absolutely zero time investigating it. All it shows is ignorance, which is fine. And I'm good with that because I can't be bothered to try and change somebody else's. I don't care. I really don't. Mm-hmm. But the thing is it's exactly what we were talking about earlier, where you want to leave openness in the mind for the possibility of other interpretations of the same thing. They exist. Just because you have only one way of seeing it doesn't mean that's the only way.
That's right. And it helps you become free. When you don't align to any one thing, but you hear and see and experience them all. And so read me this.
And we were talking about mythology and poetry and even like the Gita and the Tao Te Ching,
yeah.
Thank you, the Tao Te Ching. And all of these writings, for lack of a better word, that teach you new ways to interpret things because you're looking at a bunch of words. Here's one of my most favorite Hafiz. Well, I'm afraid there are no favorite Hafiz because it's all fantastic. Hafiz was a brilliant, brilliant Sufi poet. And the translations that I particularly like of Hafiz's poetry is by a man named Daniel Ledinsky. This particular book is called The Gift. And let me tell you, this book is a gift. It's fantastic. Anyway, this particular poem is called Crooked Deals. And Hafiz says, "There is a madman inside of you who's always running for office. Why vote him in? For he never keeps the accounts straight. He gets all kinds of crooked deals happening all over town. That will just give you a big headache and glue to your kisser a gigantic, confused frown." Everything he says makes me laugh. He's there's a wild madman inside of you that's trying to run the show.
Yeah.
And he constantly gets everything wrong.
Right.
Why are we going to vote that fucker in?
Right.
That's what he's saying. But what does that mean? What does that mean? What's your interpretation? But to me, it's obvious, you know, you're talking about your two.
Yeah.
He's talking about the two.
It's the mind. It's the mind.
And it's just the mind going cuckoo and crazy and confusing the hell out of you. And you're sitting there going, why am I alive? What's the point?
Right. Right.
Interpretation is such an enormous, enormous part of life. And once you can open yourself up to the possibility, I'm saying it again, that there are other interpretations of each and every single situation, event, experience, relation, anything that could ever happen in your reality or your experience. Once you open up to the fact that there are millions of interpretations of the same thing, things get a lot less boring.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot less predictable. That doesn't make some people happy, though. Some people really like things to be predictable. I like it when Starbucks makes me the same coffee that I want and they don't mess around. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of predictability I personally prefer in my life. But as far as, you know, relationships and other types of experience, I like a little something different.
Yeah.
And that's how you make, that's how you make relationships, I think, with people that you've been with for many, many years. Interesting, again, is to just interpret the whole thing in a different way. It's a lot of work because you are not used to doing it and you are programmed into doing it a certain way. You know what I mean? Like, you see, I know this guy. I know him inside out. I could pick him, you know.
Instead, hold space.
And instead,
And that's
you
what
don't,
good friends
you know
do, is
nothing.
they remind you to hold space for
Yeah.
your significant other. You know Heinrich Zimmer?
I don't.
Psychologist?
Oh, vaguely.
He talks about mythology as being a roadmap to self-discovery. And I
Yeah.
think it is. I think it's a
Great.
Tool in polishing the mirror so you could get a better reflection.
Same as astrology.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I love that. I love understanding that something has all these alternative meanings, that you're not stuck in this, you know, one trick pony. So
yeah.
Why not? Because again, you have nothing to lose by doing that. I do this work with my students, but I have to wait a good 6 months before I actually bring up interpretations, because when we as humans stick our heels in the ground with a belief system, it's a road that you travel down lightly, as Alan Watts always says. You don't want to alert the devil.
And you don't want to kick the mule.
That's funny, Seth. That is funny. Wow.
Oh my goodness. I know. I really enjoyed this today. This is I like this. I like this topic.
Yes, it's interesting. There's so much more to say about mythology. I mean, we didn't even talk about mythology, but just hearing Joseph Campbell talk about, he just exposed two things, the serpent and the word demonic. And that was in a 2-minute, you know, audio representation. It's also very interesting to look at this through a psychological lens. Some great psychologists that have come along, and they have, you know, amazing understandings of what mythology can be for the self-study, you know, for understanding who we are. I mean, this has been going on for thousands of years. Mm. These stories, just like Hindu deities, these are all opportunities. If we're going to just look at it and take it for what it is, how do we ever find self-acceptance and self-love? Because most of that for us in our culture is dictated by the outside world. I am who I am because you told me so. That's what everybody means when they say, well, you know, when I was little, you know, I was always a fast runner. And then when you can't run anymore, as you get older, that's failure for you, for the mind, for the ego mind. So being able to translate it through many different lenses, I love it. I'm sitting here while I'm talking to Sasa, just looking at this. I was doing this entire research project on mythology and psychology, understanding all the different ways, like Carl Jung, and he thought that mythology, myth, was to reveal the workings of the unconscious, and that we collected them ourselves from the universe. So like, myth is dreaming us, and we're not really seeing it because we're just going, well, that's an elephant head and a man body. Why am I going to do that? I mean, listen, I'm imitating myself 10 years ago. I'm not even trying to imitate somebody else. I know for me, this stuff was really, really hard for me to get my head wrapped around. I mean, it was hard enough for me when I was in religious study as a Roman Catholic when I was a child, when they would tell me these stories. And those aren't nearly as out there as what I then later researched in Hindu belief systems.
And then there's, sorry.
No, go ahead.
And then there's the Norsemen and, you know, Odin and Valhalla and, and Thor and all of them. And then there's the Maori people with the Dreamtime and, you know, and our Native American people here, you know, in North America and South America. These things, it's what's extraordinary to me is the threads that seem to weave all these stories and myths and stuff together. It's odd that people from such diverse cultures and all over the world have myths and stories that are, they have similar themes. I mean, they're universal themes.
So many.
Yeah.
So many. I mean, my favorite is obviously the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
Not that there's myth in that, because there's not, but the interpretations of what things, the symbology, is that a word?
Yeah, symbology, yeah.
Or symbolism, I think that's what I mean.
Both?
The symbolism of the things going on in the Gita and what Krishna represents and what Arjuna represents and what the battlefield represents. We have to have a whole podcast on the Gita just because it's that's really what started me off on a lot of this stuff. Also, Joseph Campbell, he had said that myth represented the human search for meaning or what gave significance to our lives, which is basically what we've all been talking about. It can give significance into our lives. The next time somebody says something to you and you get to maybe drive home alone or, you know, take a walk alone after that, you leave that person, it's really kind of cool to interpret what they said in two other ways. And I'm not saying go to Power of Positive Thinking, the glass is half full, come up with three other additionally horrific self-sabotage, you know, ways in which to interpret. I don't think it's about it being good or bad. I think it's just about finding space for there to be
different ways,
alternatives, so that maybe the thoughts in your head telling you that you are not successful and you will never be what you thought you would be and your life is not turning out like you thought it would, and why does everybody else know what they want to do and I don't, and how does anybody start a practice? Why am I listening to these two rock and roll singers talk about this shit? Like, as your mind is saying all that, interpret that in a couple different ways. We do. We do.
Right. Oh, God, it's funny, though, isn't it? In the end, that's my favorite thing.
All right, here's one from me, and then we're
and then we're done.
Bid farewell for now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Tao Te Ching.
Okay.
Fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will blunt. Chase after money and security and your heart will never unclench. Care about people's approval and you will be their prisoner. Do your work, then step back. The only path to serenity.
Oh, boy.
So stop working so hard. Stop working so hard, Katrina. That was my one talking to my two. I love it. We're doing, not holding any space for the being because we weren't taught to value people by their being. We were told to value them by their knowledge and what we have. There's no fault in this. It doesn't matter. This isn't about blaming our culture. It's not about blaming your parents. It does us no good. There are journeys you could go down, but really what it's about is understanding the deeper meanings that are available to us on the outside, which could look like books and poetry and different ways to understand your friendships and your relationships so that we could find some space inside of us to get a better self relationship. And not even better. I won't even go so far as to be that judgmental. Maybe you don't need a better relationship with
Right.
yourself, just self relationship. So, with that,
With that, on that note, this has been a lovely discussion.
do you want to recommend your book?
It's called The Gift, and the author, it's poems by Hafiz, which is HAF like Frank, IZ, the great Sufi master, and the translations are by Daniel Ladinsky.
Great.
And it's actually, I've seen this book in a lot of places. It's remarkably wonderful for me, because it resonates with me, but that doesn't mean it will resonate with everybody else, but it's worth a look.
Yeah,
It's
just look at
definitely worth a look.
everything. Look at everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend Kabir, Kabir. I really like the version by Robert Bly.
Right.
And the Tao Te Ching, I have a bunch of translations. The one I grabbed just now was one by Stephen Mitchell. And he also has a Bhagavad Gita translation, which I'm not all the way through, so I can't really say, but I'm sure it's great. And I want to get, I don't know how I ended up not having the gift. I would like to
Have
get
you
that.
got any stuff by Emmett Fox or anything that mystic Christianity, any of that stuff? That stuff is absolutely
I
mind-blowing.
would
In
love
fact, we should
that.
talk about some of that in an upcoming podcast, I think. It'd
Yeah.
be great to talk about some of
I
that
would love
mystic
to do that.
Christianity.
Also, Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth with
Oh
Bill
yeah.
Moyers.
That's a classic.
It's great. I mean, just investigate. You don't have to go to back to high school and, look at Zeus. It's different things going on here. I know that lots of people I talk to about mythology, they just start quoting what we learned in school about Zeus, but they
Well,
didn't give us interpretations. I just got the story of Zeus as if he was a real person. Thank you, Ramapo Central School District. Little shout out.
Okay, my dear.
And remember, beginners look for faults in practice, intermediates study faults, and advanced love faults. Goodbye for now.
Bye for now.
Gods like Shiva, the god of creation and destruction, which is a good god to be. Because you can go, what do you think? Do you like that? You don't like that? If you're just the god of creation, you're going, do you like that? You don't? All right, I'll put it in the garage. Shit, I haven't got a garage. So in the Christian faith, God created Adam in his own image, yeah? So that was good. But 65 million years before that, God created the dinosaurs using the image of his cousin Ted. And it must have been God, it's not in the Bible, is it? It should have been mentioned somewhere around Genesis. You think God would have grabbed someone's arm, some scribe who was coming out and saying, but before that, there were dinosaurs who were a bit crap, so fuck them. Not in there, which could mean that, maybe because dinosaurs were discovered in the 1700s, 1800s, somewhere around there. Maybe it is a philosophy, and it wasn't that. Some bloke with a beard doesn't live upstairs. Maybe. So I think under the logic situation, God, Captain God with the big beard, he must have created the dinosaurs, and Jesus must have asked a few questions like, Dad, what are these dinosaurs? What were they all about? Big, hairy, well, not hairy, were they? Big. Big slimy bastards. See, small hands. What's that for playing piano? I don't know. Well, I explained to you, Jesus, what I did was I created the world in 7 days. Then on the eighth, Dad, are you going to do this James Mason impression all the way through? Do your real voice. My real voice has been weird.
Music and editing. Special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.